You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 62, rationalizing the hell out of this. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including a chance to win a trip to Star Trek London, a special offer on the Koenig Star Celebration tickets, a Wrath of Khan screening with Nicholas Meyer in North Carolina, Trekmates 24-hour potathon for charity, 10 things you may not have known about DS9, and we remember Neil Armstrong and William Wyndham. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt to discuss the Voyager episode, Blink of an Eye. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I am doing wonderfully. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm feeling a little bit more refreshed with my new schedule.
Yes.
As you can tell, I'm not falling under the table asleep this morning, as I usually am when we record.
Typically, I'm not sure if it's you or Lieutenant Argyle who's shown up for the podcast drunk from the night before.
Hey, I didn't say I was drunk. I was just hanging out. I was just partying in the Jeffries tubes, but you know, I stay away from the gin.
Yes.
So Greg, you're looking pretty nice today, I have to say, right there. Now, I never thought I would see the day when you would be wearing a teal Starfleet uniform.
Now, our listeners are going to think you're joking, but I actually am. I had an upgrade to my program, and I am wearing a science uniform from DS9. Actually, I believe first season, US9, DS9, because it has the next-gen comm badge, which I've been tapping all day, and I'm still not getting a signal.
So you're just like Kirk in the IDW comics.
Exactly. I'm just tapping my chest for no reason. Yes. Oh, a friend of mine, the story behind the teal uniform is that a friend of mine did a mariachi trek wedding yesterday. He was there in this uniform along with a friend of his, and they had big sombreros, and they were playing ukuleles and singing songs. Again, listeners are going to think I'm joking. As they walked down the aisle, the bride and groom, who were both in full dress uniform, had to pass by guests holding Klingon pain sticks. Again, I'm not joking. The reverend at the altar was a Klingon. Okay, I guess not an actual Klingon. I should be clear, since reality and fantasy may be sliding together. It was not a real Klingon, but he did look phenomenally like a Klingon. After exchanging vows, they actually had a Batleth fight there at the front of the church with actual Batleths. Yes. So it's just Mexican, Trek, all of these things all together. It sounds like a blast. I've seen pictures. I don't know. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Chris, did you have a Trexican wedding?
I did not.
Are you regretting that? Are you regretting not having a Trexican wedding?
I don't know. I had a Hawaiian wedding. And,
okay, there you go.
There were no Batleth fights involved.
You have a Hawaii wedding and you make it sort of a Risa thing. You have a Horgon up there at the altar. Everybody's wearing robes that are just much too short.
It's just, yeah, way too short. That brings me to my next question, Greg. Now, based on everything you've told me about this wedding, I do have to ask you, was the bonding performed at the wedding?
I understand they went into a room with a lot of candles lit for no real reason, and there was a bonding, and then afterwards they never talked again or spoke about each other.
That's right.
A single time during the rest of the series.
Yes, once you're bonded, that's it.
Right.
End of the relationship, apparently.
Pretty much. I mean, once you've bonded, like, what do you have to do from there?
Right. I mean, we never know what happened to Jeremy Astor after that.
Now, I am feeling shameful. Our loyal listeners should know, I really cannot stand the teal uniform. I love the blue uniform from early days of Next Gen, and as it slowly sort of transitioned into teal, the tears start streaming down my face. But I had to wear this uniform. I had to wear it. And I've been keeping the secret. I've known for a few days that I was going to be wearing this uniform on the show, and I've been trying my best to keep it from everyone.
All right. Well, Greg, let's jump on in. We have just a full slate of stuff today. We do have to open the show, unfortunately, with a sad note, however. I woke up yesterday morning, as everyone did, to find out that Neil Armstrong passed away.
Yeah, typically with news, I see jokes first, and then I have to figure out what the jokes were about, and then I have to go back and find out if the news is actually true. This time, there weren't jokes. It was all people just honoring Neil's memory, saying how much he meant to them personally, how much he meant about the space program. Obviously, he was the first man to step foot on the moon. He had that famous quote, one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. 1969. We put people on the moon. It's kind of astonishing if you think about how long ago 1969 really was.
Well, it's astonishing, and both that much time has passed and that they were able technologically to pull that off. I mean, there was such a drive for that, and people like Neil Armstrong stepped up. And I saw a picture of him. I think it was on TrekNews.net with their article about him when he was young, when he was in his astronaut suit. And I was just looking at him and I was thinking that he's one of the bravest humans to ever live, because I was looking at his face, looking at his eyes, and thinking that this man flew in a capsule all the way to the moon and walked on the moon in 1969.
Right. And now, we send these robots to Mars and there's this complicated computer program that does everything and makes sure that it sets down. And that's an astonishing feat of engineering. But Neil Armstrong was the guy at the controls. He was running on fumes as he piloted that lunar module down to the surface, down to the Sea of Tranquility. And he was doing it by the seat of his pants. He landed on the moon. Without him being as good a pilot as he was, it just wouldn't have happened. But he figured out, he's the first guy who landed a ship on another planet. This is a big deal. Neil Armstrong's always been a big deal. He's always stayed out of the public eye. He's not been a recluse, as some have said, but he's not been one to grab at glory and always, appearing on Dancing with the Stars. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he's been this guy that you could really look to as a paragon of what space travelers should be in the future. And it's amazing, just looking back at his life.
Absolutely is. Well, we will miss Neil Armstrong and thank him for everything that he did to advance us into space. And I really, really hope that we honor his memory by finally taking back to space with humans and exploring after many decades of kind of holding back here on Earth. So
right.
Greg, we have another passing, which everyone knows about this. I found out about it right after we recorded the show last week. So unfortunately, we did not get to mention that Commodore Decker, William Wyndon, passed away at age 88.
That's right. And I had actually just watched that episode last week before we recorded the show. And to hear that he had passed was a big shock. Obviously, a lot of people from the original series, even a lot of people from Next Gen, have been passing. But this is one we definitely should keep track of and note here on the show. He was one of the great guest actors on Star Trek. Sometimes the episode's good because of the performances of the actual actors, the regulars. Sometimes it's good because the script is so good. Doomsday Machine was really anchored by Wyndham and what he was able to do. The performance he pulled off, you felt for him leaving those 400 crewmen on the planet to die.
Yep, absolutely. It's as someone who grew up with TOS, it saddens me to see so many of the actors passing away these days. It's sad, but at the same time, it also highlights how long Star Trek has been with us and the work that people like William Wyndon did and everyone else made that show so meaningful to so many people that it has now lasted for 45 years and will probably last, I think, as long as we have televisions and entertainment.
Yeah. And that's the great thing that, because Star Trek is so remembered, that there's always going to be restoration. They're going to keep that film in pristine quality. You're going to see it on Blu-ray, the next format, the next 10 formats. It's not going to go away because it has this this fandom. So William Wyndham will always be remembered. You know, I think in 200 years, people are still going to be pulling out, you know, whatever orange rays that they're using at that point and still be marveling at his performance.
Oh, by then we'll have our holodeck. We'll just go in and we'll watch, we'll participate in the 3D restorations, holographic restorations of all of the Star Trek series.
Man, I do hope that Mike Okuda is still around when they do the holodeck recreation of Star Trek episodes, because he really needs to be there for those little details as they take each shot and put it in 3D and put it in the 3D world. I mean, what if one of those Okudagrams on the bridge isn't right because he wasn't there? That would be a real shame.
It would. Again, our condolences to the family of William Wyndham as well. We and all Star Trek fans will definitely miss him. Okay, Greg, talking about original series actors, we do have a little bit of news on Walter Koenig's star unveiling celebration that's coming up in September. It's, wow, I feel like we've been talking about this story forever.
Wasn't this one of our first stories back
I think
in 2011?
In the Ready Room 1. It's a one-parter.
Yes.
I think we may have talked about this story, but it does seem like it's been forever, and now we're only a couple of weeks away. September 8th and 9th is when this will finally take place.
Right. And I guess they've spent so long planning the party, because it's going to be this huge gala celebration. 8th and 9th is the actual celebration. On the 10th is when they actually do this, the star ceremony itself. They're going to be screening The Wrath of Khan and the fan film of Gods and Men at the Egyptian Theater. At least a couple, an episode or two. I see here that Spectre of the Gun's being shown. Basically, they're showing a lot of Koenig's favorite Star Trek.
That means they're going to put the scene of, "Can you tell me where I can find the nuclear vessels? The nuclear vessels," on loop.
I do hope so. It's
I don't know if that's his favorite scene. That's one of our favorite scenes, right?
I do love that scene. Oh, man, I've been enjoying watching Koenig on the original series. He was so young at the time, but he really was pulling it off. As much as he might look like a member of the Monkees from time to time, he's funny, he's helpful, he's there, and he's one of the... He doesn't fade in the background like he could.
No,
like other helmsmen on ships named Enterprise.
Yes. Maybe what Travis needed was a fake Russian accent.
That could have been it. Oh man, I'm working on a sketch that involves a Russian mobster, and I really want to give him the Chekhov accent, but I know it'll be funnier to non-Trekkies if it's an actual correct Russian accent.
Right.
But it'll
right.
be funnier to me if he swaps out that W. That's right.
All right. Well, this is going on, and one reason that we bring it up today is that Planet Expo is running a promotion exclusively with StarTrek.com, actually, to allow fans to get tickets for just $75 to all of the events that are taking place, the anniversary party and the celebrity roast. The normal ticket price is $135. So if you go to StarTrek.com, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes, but you go there, and you can go that route to get the discounted ticket. And I have to tell you, I love watching these celebrity roasts on Comedy Central. I've seen the one of William Shatner, which was hilarious.
Very
I've seen
funny.
One of Jeff Foxworthy. I have the one of David Hasselhoff, although I've never actually watched it. I need to. I would love to see the roast. So it might be my favorite part of this whole event.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what sort of jokes they would be telling on stage about Koenig. Goodness, that would be quite a thing to see. I hope that it ends up on DVD somewhere that we can watch.
Oh, maybe, yeah. I don't know what this would... If it were going to be on Comedy Central, it would definitely would be.
Right.
I don't know if Planet Expo will record and put this out or not. That would be awesome if they did, though. Yeah.
Do we know who's going to be actually doing the roasting? I'd love to see like Will Wheaton up there.
You know, I don't know. I'm looking at the list of guests who are expected. I'll just pull out a few names here. Nichelle Nichols, Bobby Clark, Harlan Ellison, Marina Surtees, Will Wheaton, Tim Russ, Armin Shimerman, Bruce Boxleitner, of course, from his Babylon 5 days.
Right.
I think Leonard Nimoy is going to be at the actual ceremony, and also right. George Takei will. Now, from roasts I've seen in the past, I would definitely want George Takei to be
oh, yes.
on the dais. I would want Will Wheaton to be there. Mm-hmm. I think Marina Sirtis would be hilarious in a roast.
Very possibly. Oh, man.
And Nichelle Nichols, actually, she was in the roast of William Shatner.
That's right. That's right. Yes. She could tell. I bet she could tell some stories of when the cameras were not rolling there on that classic TOS set.
Definitely. All right. So if you're interested in this, go over to StarTrek.com or go to the show page. The show page for this show is trek.fm/TRR62. And there will be a link to the route through which you can get discounted tickets. Speaking of going to events and getting tickets, Greg, mm-hmm. if you want to go to Star Trek London and you want to meet the five captains there, you can get there for free, actually.
Right. And they're talking about a 6-day, 5-night trip to Destination London, along with 2 gold packet passes, 5-night double occupancy hotel accommodations, and 2 economy round trip tickets, which is, I mean, just astonishing. Because, I mean, I'm not going to be able to make it to Star Trek London.
No, you know, you're not?
I know. I'm trying my best to make it to Star Trek Las Vegas, and that's in the same country. I think it might even be the same
time zone as Ukraine.
Right. And it's still pretty difficult to make it down there. So being able to win this would be quite cool. Now, what do I have to do to actually win this fantastic offer?
All right. Well, let's go through the checklist here, Greg. Now, first of all, you need to be a Star Trek fan.
Okay, but what if I'm like a Star Wars fan that's kind of confused?
I think as long as you just don't tell anybody.
What if
about
I'm
the
only
Star Wars side?
What if I'm only a fan of the latest movie?
What if you're only a fan of the 3rd season of TOS?
Right. Well, anyone like that is not part of my personal canon.
What if you're only a fan of episodes featuring Wesley Crusher?
I'd love to see that threshold fan site. You know, I just can't get enough.
Of threshold.
Of threshold,
just,
yes.
Of the episode threshold.
Yes, there's like features about the salamander babies.
Yeah. I think podcasts with leading scientists who break yes. down the rapid evolution of salamander babies.
The science of threshold. I'd subscribe to that.
I think I follow that person on Twitter, Threshold Lover, threshold L-U-V-R. Lover.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, continuing with the checklist here. You must be 18 or older. Okay, do you qualify?
Right. That's on okay. Riker's checklist as well.
Yes, it is. And you also must live in the United States, England, Canada, or Germany.
Interesting.
I think you qualify. I don't qualify.
Right, unfortunately.
And then you must get to StarTrek.com by September 4th
right.
to enter the sweepstakes. So this is being run again between StarTrek.com and Destination Star Trek Stratford-upon-Avon. This is Star Trek London. The Stratford-upon-Avon one is with another Trek site.
That was my question. Where do I have to go to get an all-paid trip, all expenses paid trip to Star Trek Stratford-upon-Avon?
Oh, I don't know. I tried to go there. I got a 404 error.
Google Chrome blocked it. Malware.
Yes. Yes, they said, this site may harm your computer. Goodness. Okay. They're going to pick the winner on September 10th. So this is a fantastic opportunity. I encourage everyone, even if you weren't thinking about going to Star Trek London, go enter, because you never know, you might win and you may end up there. And the guest list they put together keeps growing every week, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, it really looks like it is, I mean, not to use their word, but it is the destination for Star Trek fans, especially if you're in England. And, you know, anywhere in England is pretty much going to be a day's drive or so from London. Get yourself down there. It's going to be a heck of a time.
And talking about England, Greg, we should mention that our friends at Trekmate, which is based in England as well, are putting together a really interesting event. in September to raise money for two charities, for Amnesty International and for the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit, also known as SCBU.
It's
quite a mouthful.
Yes. Now, this is a pod-a-thon, is that right? It's like a 24-hour pod-till-you-drop sort of event.
It is, and I'm hoping they're going to use that as the official name, pod-till-you-drop.
They can use that.
Although I think that may apply to those of us who are going to appear on the 24-hour pod-a-thon.
Right.
And Greg, you and I have agreed that we will be appearing at some point during this 24-hour period.
Yeah, pop on at some point and talk about something. I don't know. Get together with other Star Trek fans and the topic of conversation can go all sorts of directions.
It can. I haven't really decided yet what we're going to talk about. Now, one thing I've been thinking about, and tell me what you think about this idea, mm-hmm. is that we can stream, you know, we use video mm-hmm. when we record the show, as I think our listeners know. We could stream our video and we could like pull everyone together and we could actually do like a hands-on workshop on how to do a proper barrel roll.
That's pretty good. I like that. I like that idea a lot. I'd have to move my bed from behind me to give some proper room, and maybe I can install a big door that's coming down slowly so I can demonstrate it.
That would be awesome. I do hope you do that. I think that would be good. You know, I was watching TV this morning when I was eating breakfast, and they were actually teaching Japanese children how to do barrel rolls on the Asaichi morning show this morning.
This does not surprise me at all. They demonstrate all sorts of things on Japanese TV. Yes, barrels. Was there a practical purpose that you could ascertain?
There was, actually. The story was about children going through, especially middle school, whose posture is starting to slouch a lot.
Ah, yes.
And they were demonstrating doing barrel rolls as a way to help kind of solve that problem. You get down, you know, you straighten out a little bit, and you just roll over, over and over. So
makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, if your elementary school happens to have a warp core breach while you're there, plasma's leaking, steam's pushing out, and you have to separate the saucer, all the little kiddies will be prepared.
They absolutely will. All right. So anyway, that's my idea for our appearance on the Trekmate 24-hour pod till you drop pod-a-thon, which will be coming up starting on Saturday, September 15th at 8 p.m. GMT. And they've got a lot of guests lined up so far. Larry's going to be on, from what I understand. Rick Moyer, Colin, who hosts Trek News and Views and Deck 8 here, part of our Trek FM family, is going to be mm-hmm. on. The crew from Treknologic is going to be there. The Delta Quadrant gang will be there. Improvised Star Trek. And, of course, everyone from the Trekmate family will be on there as well. And I'm pretty sure other people will be dropping in who haven't been lined up yet, but will be between now and then.
That's just fantastic. I hope there are going to be some loyal listeners who are going to tune in for the entire thing. 8 p.m. GMT to 8 p.m. GMT the next day. You know, you don't need sleep. You know, it's for the children, right? So, yeah, just tune in, watch us, check it out. It's going to be an awful lot of fun. At least I'm very much expecting it to be an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a great time. So you can go over to trekmate.org/UK to get more information, and they're going to post on there where you should go to actually listen to the streaming, because they're trying to figure out the best source for that, since it's going to be going for 24 hours, and that'll be figured out here shortly.
There you go.
So, Greg, if I'm not mistaken, you are from North Carolina, are you not?
I am. I was born and bred in Charlotte, North Carolina. They're not far from Kannapolis, sort of way beneath the Mason-Dixon line is what I like to say. You know, the South may never rise again, but deep inside, I can feel it. I can feel it within me.
That's pretty good. So
I don't know. That's actually an accent that I actually have somewhere deeply suppressed. That's actually not me doing a special voice.
Well, you know, I actually used to speak very much like that when I was a kid.
I believe you did.
So, y'all come on down now. Come on down here and we'll go out and we'll watch us some Star Trek stuff. Them there aliens.
Let's shoot some critters.
Got them bumps on their heads and all. I mean, they're the craziest things I ever seen.
Good times. I am from North Carolina, and this makes me a little sad, actually, that The Wrath of Khan will be streaming, or will be screening, in Kannapolis, North Carolina, and director Nicholas Meyer is going to be there. He's gonna... They showed Wrath of Khan in Seattle a few months back, and Nicholas Meyer was nowhere to be seen, which I understand. You know, he lives in L.A., I believe, or at least in the thereabouts. And so it makes a lot of sense for him to go to L.A. for a screening, as he did a month or two after my screening. But here he is all the way in some little podunk town in North Carolina. And I'm quite frustrated, actually.
Now, I assume you were in North Carolina when you saw The Wrath of Khan for the first time, were you not?
I think you may be overestimating my age a little bit, Chris. I think Wrath of Khan was slightly before my time, but I didn't see it in theaters. Let's be clear. I believe I was in North Carolina as far as watching it on the TV, though, on the TV
no,
set.
No, I just meant okay. When you were a kid and you were sitting in your house in North Carolina and you were watching it on your iPod.
Right, on my iPod. as you do when you're 8 years old in the 90s. No, the weird thing about those movies is that I've seen all the Star Trek movies so many times, and I don't even remember when the first time I saw them was, that I have no recollection of when I sat down and watched Wrath of Khan. It's one of those things that it's just always been a part. So I guess I saw it first when I was there, but it feels like I've always seen Wrath of Khan.
Well, let me tell you, seeing these movies for the first time, what a cool grandmother I had.
Oh, yeah?
Is Star Trek, the motion picture through Star Trek IV, all of those movies I saw in the theater with my grandmother.
Hmm.
Now, how many grandmothers will take you by themselves to see Star Trek in the theater?
That's pretty fantastic. That's, wow. That is pretty good. Yeah, my grandmother never did anything like that for me.
So this is taking place, yes, in Kannapolis, North Carolina on October 5th. It's the Modern Film Festival, and they are going to be screening The Wrath of Khan. Mm-hmm. With Nicholas Meyer there. He's going to be doing a Q&A session right after the film. And the best part of this, the tickets are only
$4. $4. I spent $15 per ticket to see the next gen on the big screen. And you're getting to lay down $4. So these tickets, note, these tickets are going to sell out really, really fast.
They are, and that's the one drawback to our release schedule here is that these tickets go on sale on Monday,
right,
August 27th, and our show drops on Tuesday, August 28th. So, if you're listening to this and you want those tickets, run over there right away and see if you can grab those, because I do think they will sell out quite quickly at that price.
Yeah.
But they may still have some. You just go over to modernfilmfest.net and you'll find the information there. And I believe there's a button, right, Greg, where you can just click
just
it
tap
and
away.
Get your tickets.
Yep.
Tap away. So head on over there. The actual the whole festival is August 5th through 7th. It's at the Gem Theater.
Yeah, I do wonder. I should ask our friends at Dork Trek if they're going to be making their way down there. Of course, they're up in Virginia Beach, in Virginia, obviously. And I know they were down in Charlotte a month or two ago for Heroes Con. I wonder if they'll make it down for the Wrath of Khan screening as well. Basically, if I were anywhere on the East Coast, I would try to make it to Kannapolis. Not that there's anything else to do in Kannapolis, North Carolina, other than shoot critters and see a Q&A with Nicholas Meyer, but if you're in the area, feel free to head on down.
Do you do the Q&A first and then you go shoot critters after? Or do you shoot critters before you go to the screening and the Q&A?
You're pretty much always shooting critters. I mean, what if there's a critter in the theater and you want a hat to wear and you want to give the hat to Nicholas Meyer while he's up there? You got to shoot the little varmint while you got him right there in your sights, you know. Little varmint.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Ben will go down anyway if the whole Boner crew doesn't go down. So,
right.
All right, Greg. Well, let's move on. Now, we've got a couple of interesting little stories here that I want to talk about. Now, IO9, which is a great science fiction website, they ran an article the other day called 10 Things You Probably Didn't Know About DS9. And of course, this caught my eye because I think I know quite a lot about DS9, but I'm always interested in these little obscure bits that I haven't heard before.
Yeah. This was an interesting list. I clicked on it too because I'm like, oh, what do I not know about DS9? I've read Memory Alpha.
Exactly. If you've read Memory Alpha, that means you've read Terry Erdman's DS9 companion.
Exactly.
So what do you not know? But let me ask you these 10 items and tell me if you knew these or you didn't know these.
Okay.
The first one, Dr. Bashir, actor, Alexander Siddig, was the first choice to play Benjamin Sisko.
Yeah, I think I actually had heard that one. And it's an interesting idea. Of all the other actors on the show, I could definitely see him doing the role. I believe what the article says is he ended up being a little too young to pull off Sisko. Alexander was very, very young when DS9 started. And he'd have a really hard time pulling off that gravitas of a commander of a space station.
You think? He turned out to be a little too young to pick up Jadzia Dax when he came out of the airlock. I mean, it was
exactly.
It was like a middle school boy asking out this supermodel, or, you know, it's like,
right?
Will you go to the high school dance with me? I don't know. I did know this. I knew that he was the first choice. I'm really glad they didn't cast him. I just cannot imagine the storyline that unfolded for DS9 working.
Yeah.
With him in that role.
Yeah.
I cannot even imagine that storyline with Picard in that role. It has to be Avery Brooks for me.
Avery Brooks is so perfect for the role. And of course, you know, they start writing the role for him. I doubt we would have seen Siddig shave his head and grow a goatee in the fourth season. It would have been a different sort of show.
I'm launching Photoshop as we speak.
I want to see that. I want to see that in the Enhanced podcast.
All right, number two, the show was originally planned as a Western.
Now, this is one of those things we've talked about.
Yeah,
let's talk about Chris, about the setup of DS9. but, you know, that it was originally supposed to be, you know, just as TOS was going to be Wagon Train to the Stars, this was going to be the Rifleman in space.
Right.
But what this article says, and this is the bit I didn't know, they were planning on setting it like as a Western, like set it on an actual planet and sort of do it that way, sort of a frontier colony rather than a space station.
Quark's was going to be a saloon.
Right.
All the Dabo girls were going to dress, you know, in the frills.
And... right. I could see Rom there on, you know, the saloon piano.
Exactly. And in every episode, there's a shootout.
Yes. This would have been weird. I mean, everyone's favorite Western in space, Firefly, managed to pull it off pretty well. But they were on a ship that traveled, you know, from colony to colony. It wasn't set on just one place. Although, it would have been interesting to see a Star Trek show set so much on location rather than on standing sets.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get that in the future.
Yeah.
Well, number three. Lwaxana Troi was supposed to be a major recurring character.
This one, she kind of was a major recurring character, wasn't she?
Right. That's what I thought when I first read it. But actually what they talk about is that she was supposed to be used to the same extent that Jake and Nog were used.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, because she's definitely in only a few episodes here or there. I think Lwaxana is one of those horseradish characters we talked about. If she'd been in half the episodes a season or more, I think it would have grown a little thin. I mean, what sort of storylines can she really go on other than the ones that we saw? And there are already a couple Lwaxana episodes that are a little, this show didn't really need to exist.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I would have wanted her around the station all the time.
Yeah.
Especially if they were going to play the whole she's in love with Odo thing.
Right, right. What I wouldn't have minded is instead of Dr. Bashir, let's just have Dr. Chapel be the DS9 doctor. I don't know how you work that. I don't know if it works in continuity, but Dr. Chapel, I'd love to see her as a part of DS9.
Yeah, that could work. All right, number four. I love this one. Kai Opaka was originally a man who gave naked people foot rubs.
I didn't understand this one, and I kind of moved on because it said Kai Opaka. But really, I mean, is this foot rubs is one of those directions that Star Trek tries to go in a little too much, and it never really turns out well.
You know, they do, don't they? They actually do. I was thinking, you know what DS9 really needed was more naked people getting foot rubs. But yeah, they do kind of, especially if you think of naked people getting foot rubs in a broader sense of, you know, naked people getting decontamination rub downs, naked people getting their beards shaved off in bubble baths. Yeah.
A little too much naked people. I'm glad they didn't go in this direction. Obviously, Kai Opaka, we have our differences, but I'm glad that they went with just, you know, she's just a normal spiritual leader, no massage parlor antics.
Well, it could have been worse. They could have been planning to give you a foot rub while naked with Kai Winn.
Right. That's true. Kai Winn. Oh, goodness. The whole Bajoran religion thing, I'm glad they went the direction they went and didn't do some of the stuff that it looked like they were going to do early on.
Yeah.
The whole religion, Kai Opaka, Kai Winn, all the Vedics, it's a little much for me.
They didn't completely abandon this idea, though. You know, they did pick it up at least off camera with Dirty Vedic Baral later.
That's
on.
That's very true. Yeah, there's that episode where the two of them are naked together while they're... It was Baral, right? While they're like trying to choose who's going to be the next Kai, and
oh yeah, I think so.
And Kira and Baral are there anyway.
I don't even want, if you line them all up naked and you're choosing who gets to be Kai, I don't even want to know what.
Oh man,
by what measurement are you gauging who is going to be Kai?
Wow, oh, goodness, wow! And okay. We're only four into these 10. Things you didn't know about DS9.
Let's move on. Dax's trill spots weren't just hand-drawn. They were numbered. Okay, I didn't know this.
Is just a random bit of trivia. Yeah. There was one guy who basically got to draw the spots on every time, which that's definitely a job I would have wanted.
He was known as Mr. Lucky Guy on the set.
Yes, exactly. Similar to the guy who got to rip the gaffer tape off. Anyway, moving on. Not going to tell any of Carrie Fisher's stories. I'm going to let her tell those for herself.
Number six, the show could have had a musical episode.
That would have been great. I had actually heard this one. Was it Ronald D. Moore who kept pitching it?
I think so.
I believe it's good old RDM. Yeah, everyone would be infected with a virus that would make them have to communicate in song. Excuse me, I must be coming down with something.
Of course, the most interesting part of the whole concept was that they get infected by a very, very unique virus that forces you to reenact the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, that could have been quite an interesting thing.
Like with Glee and every other show, everyone at some point has to reenact the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And
Star Trek is no different. Oh, man. I would have loved to see the musical episode. I hope they do it in a series coming soon.
Now, the next one is the first object to go through the wormhole was a cow.
Now, this is one of those visual effects things, right? Where they just, they needed some sort of object and basically all they had. Similar to when the holodeck gave B'Elanna like just random null object. Which episode was that? Where she needs some object to do some sort of thing and it gives her some, it looks like a prop that they found on the catering table.
There were so many
loyal
listeners like
will remember this was several months ago.
We need Mr. Props Michael Fisher with us today to tell us.
I know, he's so helpful. So they had basically a cow and I think a biprint, like biplane wings. So there's that test footage somewhere out there of a cow with biplane wings traveling into the wormhole.
I wish that had really made it into the show. That would have been awesome. And then Kira can say, "There's your cow." All right.
Oh man.
Next one. The station science officer could have been wheelchair bound.
Right, and this actually turned into the episode Melora, right. which is not one of my favorite episodes, but it is, it's one of those cool concepts where it's somebody from a planet that has, I believe it's lower gravity, so they can't really mm-hmm. handle the station's gravity.
Right.
I wouldn't have minded it. The only problem was the, you know, doing the special effects from week to week.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think this is something most people, most fans already knew, but mm-hmm. that was possibly the case. They did pick this up later, though, in the Titan novels, where she actually does show up on the Titan.
I thought you were talking about Riker's special room where he turns off the gravity and there's just mirrors on all the walls.
Oh, if the listeners could have only seen the expression on your face just now when I said that was hilarious. No.
Okay.
The actual officer, she's there.
I see. I understand
all right.
now.
Number 9, Quark isn't wearing his own nose in the pilot.
Again, this is one of those random trivia things. I guess I didn't know this. What, did they not have Shimmerman's nose available? So he's actually wearing the nose that they made for Rom, or the pit boss from
the
pilot?
I think it's something along those lines. Yeah, he was wearing Rom's.
I'll have to go back and watch that, because I guess his nose is going to look weird, but I don't spend that much time looking at Quark's nose, to be honest.
Yeah, Rom was actually referred to as the pit boss originally.
Yeah.
When the
yeah, they didn't have this idea that he was going to be the brother or any of that. Yeah. Rom turns, I love Rom. We should do a show about Rom sometime, because actually he's one of my favorite characters from DS9.
He does turn out to be a really good character, and he's very different by the end than he is in the pilot episode. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number 10 here, last one on the list. The show is full of Man from U.N.C.L.E. references.
And this is one of those, Man from U.N.C.L.E. is something I heard of. I know that it exists, but I can't say that I have any idea whatsoever what it actually is, nor would I recognize a Man from U.N.C.L.E. reference if it was, you know, staring me in the face.
Well, U.N.C.L.E. was the United Network Command for Law Enforcement. That's
oh, of course.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And so with Garrick kind of being the spy, at least implied spy, on the station, and he's a tailor, that's the first kind of Man from U.N.C.L.E. reference. And then it goes all through the show, you know, it shows up all over the place. If you it's kind of hard in SD, you know, to see things, but there are, you know, logos and text and things all over the place related to the Man from U.N.C.L.E. And I love how they throw those things into the show. Which reminds me, Greg, the iMessage you sent me the other day talking about these little things that writers put into the shows.
Yes.
Was it Turbo Lift?
It was Turbo Lift C-17.
And that's
from the JJ film, the prologue, film. Which I watch every time I need to have a good cry. The captain goes down this Turbo Lift, and I'm like, C is the third letter of the alphabet, and 1, so add them together, and you got 4. That is so sneaky. I would have never, if I wasn't watching it for the literal 47th time, I would not have been able to notice this. It just would have flown right past me.
It is the sneakiest reference, yes, that I have ever seen of 47. Yeah. That
was I really like to see one of those StarTrek.com features. I don't know, one of the people who's working on them, find me the 10 sneakiest 47s in Star Trek history. Because I know, I mean, there's some blatant ones. There, like, Generations had, there were 47 survivors from the Laku. Was that the name of the ship?
That's
anyway,
right.
Some of them are very obvious. But some of them, like this Turbo Lift, you just, wow, that's incredible.
I like the sneaky ones better, personally. All right. Well, that concludes the list. If you want to read the whole article, we will put a link to it in the show notes. It's over on io9. Okay, Greg, while we have our silly hats on here.
Yes.
We had a very interesting iMessage conversation the other day about Star Trek sitcoms. And, you know, I had a whole lead in for this, you know, the story about Michael Dorn trying to get funding for a television show and all that stuff. But why don't we just play the game, guess the sitcom. Now, you're going to tell me the names of some sitcoms that you're working on. You're going to pitch these, I believe, to the networks, right?
I am. What I basically like you to do, Chris, is I'm going to give you the title, And I'd like you to not only figure out who the show is about, but what's sort of the basic premise of the show.
Okay.
See what you think, and then I'll do some in return. So the first one I have is called just Loeffler's Laws. And now this is Thursday nights on NBC, Loeffler's Laws.
Okay, well, this is quite easy, of course.
Yes.
This is,
start with an easy one.
As international sex symbol Tristan Riddell will tell you, I'm a really big fan of Ensign Loeffler.
Yes.
And so obviously, these would be, it would be her dispensing her wisdom to the crew of the Enterprise on a weekly basis while young Wesley Crusher pines over her in the background and never really gets further than maybe sharing a milkshake and 10 forward with the beautiful young ensign.
That's pretty much it. Although I think my actual pitch for this is that she goes to a new ship. So she's sort of the new girl in town.
Oh,
she's trying
okay.
to make friends. So it's sort of like Next Gen from like a newbie's perspective. I actually like this idea a lot. I really want to pitch this to the networks.
All right.
So she uses her own Loeffler's Laws to get by.
It sounds like a winner. I think I would watch this show.
Definitely.
What else do you have on your list there, Greg?
Should I do the second one, Chris, or should we just move on to the third?
Why not? I mean, Char is coming on with us for the feature.
That's very
so
true.
Why not?
Well, the second one is a post-TNG series, takes place featuring some of the bridge officers that aren't featured every week on Next Gen. And this one is, of course, called Ribbed for Her Pleasure.
Oh, Greg has fallen out of the chair.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I know they want to call it Rikers in Space, but who wants to see the Riker and Troy show? Let's see what happens to Lieutenant Worf after DS9.
Right. My guess is that this would star Worf,
mm-hmm.
and possibly it's Worf's journey after his assignment on DS9. You know, it takes a lot out of you, all those years of devotion to Starfleet. And when you get out, sometimes you just kind of want to go out and explore. And
yeah, and you know,
why do I feel like this is getting cut out of the show?
Probably. The life of a terrorist on the run, the single captain looking for love and blood. I don't know. I think we have something here, Chris, but we may need to cut all this out.
I think so. I suggest that you pitch this to HBO.
Yes.
Not to CBS.
Right. All right. Well, the next one maybe is a little more family friendly. This one is more the story of a lovable but bumbling engineering officer. It's called Gin and Dilithium.
Gin and Dilithium. This is going to be a good one. Starring Chief Engineer Argyle,
yes.
if I'm not mistaken.
They finally gave Chief Argyle his own ship. Well, not his own ship, but he's not just one of the chief engineers. He's running the whole thing.
I think this would be very inexpensive to produce because you only need to build two sets. All
yes.
you need to do is build engineering,
yes.
and then you just need to build a Jefferies tube. And I mean, he's not going anywhere else,
no,
right?
That's pretty much it. Oh, man. All right. Now the next one, I don't think TV was ready for this show in the 90s, but maybe, you know, it's new age. It's okay to be Takei. This show is called Miles and Jules.
Yeah, this is, I think it's your remake of Bosom Buddies, right?
Wait just a second.
What?
Where's Modigliani? Where's my parakeet?
I don't know. We had him when we got on the bus.
I've lost my yellow friend.
Boy, oh, I have to tell you, I really have to stop making comments like that when people are sipping tea and drinking water.
Yes, you really do. It's hard to keep that one in.
I know what this is about, so obviously it's just the exploits of our two favorite lovers,
yes.
Miles O'Brien and Julian Bashir.
Let's just say Keiko knows what's going on and Keiko's okay with it.
She's okay with it. She's like, look,
as long as
Just let me go down to the planet. I'm going to study the flowers. You guys, yes. Look, you can have the quarters. Don't worry. I'm not coming back anytime soon.
As long as Miles cares for Molly and brings home, you know, the replicator rations, what he does, you know, with whomever he chooses.
It's all good with her. All right, now what's next on your list?
I've got a couple more. Now, this one I think is really going to hit the top of the charts when he may not have been the biggest star of Voyager, but he's going to be the biggest star on Thursday night. This show is called My Big Fat Ensign Wedding.
Oh, so this is where Harry Kim finally gets a promotion from boyfriend to fiancé to
yes.
full-fledged husband, right?
He didn't get promoted from ensign. He's still an ensign, let's be clear.
That's right.
But he did get promoted from boyfriend.
At least in his off-duty time, he got yes. a promotion.
And just think of all the antics around the starbase. You know, Ensign Kim's come home. He's got all these accolades. He's featured in the front of the Federation papers. He's got girls coming. You know, as much as he tries to fight them off, he can't succeed entirely. And one of them happens to come through and takes his heart away.
And I know that the whole event is going to be catered by Neelix.
Yes. Yes, Neelix makes some of his special... It's not plomeek soup. What is the stuff that Neelix makes?
He makes Leola roots.
Leola roots too, yes. So I hope you like Leola roots.
He can really work magic with the roots.
He really can. All right, now the next show may also need to be on HBO because this one's called Dating the Delaneys. And honestly, I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
I think so. Now my question, though, would be, if you just pitched this to me in isolation, I would think that it was about Tom and Harry dating the Delaneys. But now that we know that Harry's getting married,
mm-hmm.
well, is he marrying one of the Delaney sisters or does Tom have a new wingman?
No, Dating the Delaneys actually takes us away from the Voyager Bridge crew, and it's just about the Delaney sisters and their next assignment after Voyager, which is, of course, picking up young, attractive men.
All right. Why don't we move on to the next one on your list here, Greg? Now, I may have misread this here. It may be a typo. I'm not sure. You got to let me know. Because let me just tell you, I read this as Asometrics, and I was thinking it might be a Riker sitcom, but is it something else?
Okay. So this... This show is entitled Astrometrics.
Oh, Astrometrics. Okay.
Astrometrics.
I got you.
But instead of spelled the normal way, it ends T-R-I-X, because in this show, Seven of Nine isn't just studying science. She's also in her dungeon. Maybe we should move on. Maybe we should...
Oh, gosh. All right.
Or get started talking about this
HBO
one.
HBO is going to take that one on. So.
No, probably not.
Maybe Cinemax. Is Cinemax still around?
Probably. I'm sorry, Jerry Ryan, if you're listening. I really have all the respect for you as an actress. I also think this show would be very popular.
What's the next one, Greg?
The next one. This is one of my favorites. And this is not an original title. Okay, but it's Keeping Up with the Cardassians.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, just what we need. Another Cardassians joke. So
I know. I'm sorry. But, imagine a reality show that follows around, you know, a Gull and his family of you know, I don't know. He follows them around the Cardassian Empire as they're fighting their way through the different governments that arise and, you know, the different fashions on Cardassia Prime. It's a tough world out there.
I don't know. It might work. It could be interesting to some people. Yeah. I don't know if it would
honestly
be as humorous as the other ones, though, because, you know...
Probably not.
I've never felt like Cardassians really had that much of a sense of humor.
That's probably true. Yeah, it would be a little weak, probably. And honestly, I don't know that much about the Kardashians to make too specific of jokes here. So we probably should just move on. I want to make references to, I don't know, is Ray J, is that a thing? Is that like a rapper that one of the Cardassians was dating?
Ray J.
Ray J? Could I say Lieutenant Ray J? And would people laugh? I honestly don't know. I'm obviously too big of a nerd to make pop culture references. I'm sorry.
All right. What is one more that you have on the list here, Greg?
Okay. We'll just do one more. And this one's a sweet sitcom. Actually, reminds me of those shows from the 60s. This one's called My Boyfriend Neelix.
Oh, yes. Now, the important thing when you're getting ready to produce My Boyfriend Neelix is you need to make sure that you sign all the actors to a 9-year contract.
Right. That's very true. My Boyfriend Neelix. I mean,
are you going to play this pretty straight? Is it going to be Neelix Kiss and Paris and Neelix is the jealous boyfriend? And yes. There's all kinds of misunderstandings going on all the time.
That's pretty much it. It's pretty much everything from the first few seasons of Voyager that we didn't see on screen. Just, you know, what is Kes doing in her off hours? What sort of shenanigans does she get into? What sort of jealous fits of rage does Neelix find himself in?
That could be pretty good. Plus, I mean, you could have a spaghetti fight every week. You know how they had the fist fight every week in TOS.
Yes.
You could have the spaghetti fight every week.
Spaghetti fight. And every episode just ends with you know, Kes laying her head on Neelix's shoulders and just, my boyfriend Neelix.
All right. Well, I had one for you, Greg. Just one. And tell me if I just give you the title. This is actually a real sitcom title.
Okay.
From the 80s. Tell me which three characters would be involved in this one. Three's a crowd.
Oh, wow. I don't actually...
Would you like me to give you the series?
Yes, please do.
It would involve characters from Deep Space Nine.
Okay. Because I was going to say this would be the story about when Kira, Gul Dukat, and Odo move into an apartment together.
Oh, you're very close.
What is it then? If I'm slightly off,
it would be about three people we already talked about earlier. This would be when it's a spinoff of Three's Company.
Okay.
When Miles and Keiko had been living with Bashir.
I see.
And finally, Keiko decides she just can't take anymore, and she just lets Miles and Julian have the place to themselves because, you know, Three's a crowd. For someone whose self-declared mission is to get her crew home, Captain Janeway sure made a lot of unnecessary pit stops to explore every little thing she came across. And in the sixth season, that got her into quite a bit of trouble when they decided to explore a bizarre planet that looks like someone's making pottery in the movie Ghost. Or I don't know what that thing was, but it was a planet in which time runs at a different rate because it has a tachyon core. Now, when we're taking the tech right off the bat, you know we're in for something good. And to help us talk about this episode today, of course, Greg is here. And joining us, as always, is our Voyager editor, Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char. How are you?
Hey, good to be with you guys, as always.
Now, somehow today, we have managed to assemble the Dirty Scrabble Dream Team for the panel.
That's right.
So you know that this is going to go off the rails at some point, but
probably.
Yeah, no doubt.
We're glad to have you here with us to talk about Blink of an Eye.
Right.
Yes, and I'm happy to be here to derail it. Yes, as much as I possibly can. Although I'll try to behave.
Which, you're right, Chris. I'm so used to watching Next Gen, where their job is to go out and explore strange new worlds that it didn't even strike me as odd when Janeway's like, oh, that kind of looks like a quasar. Maybe we should stop going home and check it out. But no, that's completely wrong. That's going down a rat hole in Voyager. Like, they need to just stay focused.
Right. I mean, you would think that she would have learned. You would think that Chakotay would step in and say, look, Kathy, how many times have we done this before? You know how it always ends. Why are we inviting this upon ourselves again?
And then she says, look, Coco, I want to check out that spinning planet. And you're not going to stop me. Well, he calls her Kathy. She calls him Coco.
Right. Okay. I'm on to your train of thought now. Right. Yes. Because Coco is Conan O'Brien in my
right,
mind.
But Team Coco.
Janeway doesn't know who Conan O'Brien is.
Right, but only Qs are allowed to call Catherine Kathy.
That's true.
Well,
you know this, right?
On camera.
So, but I guess Coco balances it out. I would just call him Chalky, as Colin likes to call him.
Chalky.
Yeah. Kathy and Chalky.
There you go.
There's another sitcom idea for
perfect.
You guys.
Oh, great. You need to start on that pilot right away.
Totally.
All right, so this is the episode Blink of an Eye from Voyager. I think I may have confused you guys a little bit with my original instructions.
Not to be confused with Wink of an Eye.
Right, from the original series. Or with the unfilmed TNG Season 8 episode Link and a Thigh.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, dear.
Oh, goodness.
I can't say I've seen that one. Maybe I should.
All right, let's jump into the episode here. Okay, so the first thing that I wanted to talk about... The actual episode.
Oh, okay.
Now, I love this episode of Voyager. I think it's a very interesting concept. And I think there's a very good story here. But Greg, I believe that you feel like this episode fails to tell any kind of story.
Yeah.
So...
I guess we'll jump into this. It's kind of an overarching thing, but I'm always a little let down by this episode. As much as I understand what they're going for, I think, I feel like it never focuses on anything. It tells these, five or six vignettes on the surface of the planet, and then it's got this story on Voyager that it's cutting back to that never focuses on anyone in particular. It sort of shows the entire cast, and one thing I love about DS9 is, sure, they've got this gigantic cast, but each episode kind of focuses on one character. Like, this is an O'Brien episode. You know, I just watched Hard Time. Or this is a Bashir episode. Or this is a Sisko episode. And I love how that focus allows them really to tell something new about the character. Whereas in this show, you know, we see Chakotay for like one scene where he's getting all excited about it's an anthropological discovery and I get to do something this week. But that's immediately dropped. You know, it's 30 seconds of Chakotay being excited and then, or 30 seconds, and then nothing. And that, I think that's part of why I'm a little let down. But I think you were making some points about they're trying something a little bit bigger this week.
That's how I feel. How about you, Char? I'll go into it in a minute. But
okay.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Chris. I do see the bigger picture of it. And yet, I do kind of see what you're getting at, Greg, where, yeah, all of a sudden, oh, let's remember that Chakotay is into anthropological stuff. Let's do that. And then they do kind of move on a little bit. It's dropped, like, mm-hmm. within the episode. Yeah. There's no real follow-up. Go figure.
Naomi Wildman's, like, writing a book report about it for one
now,
scene.
That should just
yeah,
have not been in the episode.
It just seemed like she was just harassing Seven. She needed a paycheck right. that week or something. I don't know. But I do really like the bigger picture elements of this episode a lot more than the smaller stuff. I mean, overall, my gripes are a lot less than the positives. Hmm. So that's where I stand on it.
Yeah. So for me, Greg, the bigger picture is, yes, it is a collection of vignettes, but all of the vignettes are connected with one another through time. That
right.
what we get to see is the progression of this civilization going from an age where they, where would you put them? They're kind of maybe like in a medieval state.
Yeah, it's kind of like a medieval.
Yeah.
Not quite cavemen or anything, but
yeah, they're not.
They've got
cavemen.
Altars and they're worshiping stars and that
right.
sort of thing.
Yeah. In the beginning, to basically where we are at this point in our development right now, and we get to see all that happen over the course of this episode, but more importantly, we get to see how a belief in something that you cannot explain can be the impetus for development within a civilization. And beyond that, what's interesting to me here is you can see how that can take you in two directions. So if you look at human civilization, the early days when we didn't even know the earth was round, but we didn't know what the stars were, and we mm-hmm. thought the stars were flames, and we thought the stars were on fixed crystal disks that rotated around our home, and we took this very supernatural, very religious view of things, where now, for most of us in the 21st century, we approach this stuff from a scientific perspective. And we get to see in this episode, too, how a civilization can take a religious route or take a scientific route
right.
in trying to explain something that appears to be supernatural.
Now, can I give you guys real quick, and then we can get on to talking about the actual episode, but let me give you my real quick elevator pitch on what I think the show could have done to manage to alleviate my concerns as well as still do the episode you're talking about. What if at the start of the episode, okay, they're going along, they get caught, they decide they need to see what's going on down on the planet, and they beam the doctor down. And the doctor beams down, and it's medieval times, and they're worshiping the stars, and they see the star appear, or he hears from people that they just saw the star appear. And then as the episode progresses, like, the doctor's program glitches. Like, they try to beam him back. It doesn't quite work. He goes back. And now time's jumped. And it's like 100 years in the future. And now we see the doctor experiencing the world later. And this happens a few times. So it's not that we're jumping back and just seeing these disparate events on the planet. We're making it a doctor episode. And we're making the doctor experience all of this firsthand. And we're seeing it through his eyes. Now, don't you think that would have made a more dynamic thing than learning about Naomi Wildman's book report?
It might have been more focused, that's for sure.
Yeah. It would have been more focused. You wanted to focus on our characters. So
yeah.
It would have been more focused on our characters. I think for me, I think we can all agree that the Naomi Wildman bit could have been cut out of the episode, that was pretty much a waste of screen time. But for me, what I get from this episode and the reason that I love this episode, it wouldn't have worked that way, because I need the focus to be on the people on that planet. I don't want to see the events through the eyes of one of our characters. I want to actually see it through the eyes of the people on the planet.
And
that's true, and we did in this episode.
Yeah, we did.
So that does bring up a new a cool dynamic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess the difficulty is how do you anchor it when it's just scene and then years pass and there's another scene. I mean, Daniel Dae Kim is one of the like credited guest stars in the episode, but he doesn't show up until like 35 minutes in. And even then, he's only in that spacecraft and he shows up on the Voyager bridge. He's like the main guest star, but we see all these other people on the planet first. I guess it's just a matter of I'm not sure if it works for me. I get it conceptually, but when I finish the episode, I feel kind of let down. But maybe after we get through talking about all the details, I'll appreciate the episode a little bit more. I do love the concept, and this is probably what they pitched originally, that Voyager becomes part of a planet's development. That they're like that they have like Saturday morning TV shows about the Sky Palace or however it is. That's fantastic. Like that's a really good concept.
I think one thing that if they did this kind of show on a regular basis, then I would have a problem with it, because I will agree with you that it does lack focus. It is a big picture episode. There's a thread running through it that you kind of have to follow through, and it's kind of a fun little diversion from the usual events on Voyager every week. One thing I do like about this episode too, though, is one reason I like Far Beyond the Stars on Deep Space Nine is that you could remove, well, I guess not exactly. I started to say you could remove all the Star Trek elements. It's not Far Beyond the Stars. Actually, a better example is The Visitor or The Inner Light. You could remove the Star Trek elements from the story, and you could still tell the story, and the story would still work. And this is an episode where it could be anything. It doesn't have to be Voyager. The fact that this is a Starfleet crew has no bearing on the development that their presence drives for this civilization. And I like that from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, this would probably be an episode that I would point out to people when I'm trying to show them how Voyager was sort of the producers trying to do TOS again and really show some strange new worlds, whereas TNG kind of got mired in diplomatic missions and DS9
staff meetings
and all of that.
Staff meetings.
This really is something that could have started as like a Harlan Ellison novel, you know, from the 50s or 60s that they just turned into a Star Trek episode.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good science fiction. Whether it works for you as a Star Trek episode or not, I think it's good science fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. It is an interesting concept. Like you said, strange new worlds. This really is it. We've not really done anything quite like this before, have we?
Well, except in wink of an eye with the hyper-accelerated aliens. Was that...
Not to be confused with this one.
Was that like their planet was that way? Or did they... I haven't seen wink of an eye in a while. Did they have like a special device that sped them up?
Yeah, they had one of those.
Oh, I honestly don't remember.
They had like a space bay belt or space bay bracelet. That, you know, they always have those when they come on the ship when they need to.
It's true, yes. They can do anything.
Maybe I should make that one next on my TOS watch. But no, this is the first time we've seen a planet like this different. Like, okay, we'll see, you know, like demon class planets where there's lava and stuff. Or, you know, it's a cave planet again. But this is the first time we've really seen such a different type of planet. And that's right that it is really cool. I mean, it makes your brain sort of stretch and think, well, what sort of things are out there in space?
Right.
Well, if we talk about, before we go on too far, from the impetus for advancement here, it's interesting that as they become more and more advanced, that even when they get into, they get out of the religion side of it, they get more into the scientific side. They know it's a spaceship at this point, right? They even have diagrams that they've drawn of what the ship looks like because they can see it with telescopes.
Yes.
But you really have two different camps of thought here. You have the scientists who are observing it through the telescope, who are sending prime numbers, sending the periodic table to them, trying to communicate with them. And then you've got the military people who just want to blast it out of the sky.
Right.
Pretty much.
Sounds familiar.
right. So I think it shows that even when you have something that can drive you forward, I mean, what has driven us forward most of all in our own civilization, it has been war. It has been fear of others wanting to destroy those we don't agree with or that we don't know. I mean, most of our space age advancements have been born of the military.
Right.
And in a sense, that's what Voyager's doing here, only there. They talk about a space race between the various nation states on this planet. There are 26 of them.
Right.
Not as many as we have, but there's a space race. But instead of racing in order to destroy each other, they're all racing to see who can get to Voyager first.
Right. Well, I mean, we talked about Neil Armstrong earlier, but our moon, I think, was that same sort of impetus. I mean, it doesn't cause earthquakes, but it certainly caused the tides, and it's this big ball sitting right there. I mean, it's really not that far away, and it's like, well, we should go and see what it is and step on it, and the fact that it's our ship makes that really cool. And what really I think is interesting is the fact that it does have this really dramatic effect, that it knocks down the buildings and causes these giant earthquakes. I feel like, unless I was missing something, this culture was sort of shown as advancing really fast, too. Like, developing all these things much faster than we did.
They were, yes.
Yeah, I would say a little faster. Can we talk a little bit about the evolution of this culture, just a little bit? How they went from essentially medieval days into kind of what I considered like early 1900s of our time, where they're experimenting with radio waves for the first time and that sort of thing to a little more of a space-faring species. Mm-hmm. I do find it interesting that they make a lot of parallels to our own development, mm-hmm. which begs the question, I mean, do all species in the Star Trek universe develop with certain things, certain markers they must reach before they can go on to the next step? I mean, is that just the way civilizations build? Yeah. Or is this just a really narrow example showing from the writer's perspective, well, this is how all civilizations evolve, end of story. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they were thinking that narrowly. I think they were trying to show some parallels with little variation. And like I said before, kind of having to go up the rungs of the ladder in their own way,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah, I mean...
What do you guys think?
I would have liked to see a few more differences. I mean, they talk about how the buildings have more iron in them, so that they're stronger. I would have liked to see mm-hmm. more differences like that. And I'm not sure exactly what they would have been. I mean, it's one of those things you just got to sit in the writer's room and talk about. Obviously, it looked like they were building right. those telescopes quickly. They were figuring out how to transmit to the ship quickly. So those sort of things. But yeah, it didn't seem like it was that different from us, at least until the very end, where they very quickly built spaceships and tractor beams and mm-hmm. this device that lets him phase. I mean, the trip of those astronauts to Voyager is quite different from the trip to the moon. I mean, it looked much more advanced than the lunar module.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love their rocket ships. Yeah,
it's really cool.
That was a cool design.
Yeah, very cool.
The rocket
cool.
ship was great and clearly designed by William T. Riker. So that oh. giant flight control joystick
yes.
right there on the dash.
Yep.
I did love the joystick, yeah.
Yeah, that was a cute little touch. It really was.
But my favorite scene was when Jen, when he says that, you know, we have visual contact, and he grabbed the joystick, and when the Trill Ensign looked over at him and gave him that look, that was my
yes.
my favorite part of this episode.
Did you say Jen? I thought you were going to say your favorite part is when they get to the ship, but then it disappears right out of the middle of the ocean, and then they have to travel in time. And
right, exactly.
Yeah. All of that stuff.
Slingshot around the sun.
So, I think what they were going for here is not that all civilizations develop on the same path, but that there's a basic flow, I mean, an advancement of a society. But they advance more quickly than we do. And the reason they advance more quickly than we did or are now is because Voyager was this very strong impetus. And, you know, there's a reason why we say that necessity is the mother of invention.
Right.
That for them, they needed to develop this technology and they needed to do it rapidly. I mean, they were on the clock. These earthquakes were destroying their planet. And even though we don't get to see it in the episode because there's not enough time, you know that their scientists were having conferences and doing research and determining how much time they had left before mm-hmm. these earthquakes destroyed the civilization. And so they were really on the clock and they had to develop, they had to find a way, especially once they knew. Okay, going back, before they knew Voyager was a ship, they just know there's something in the sky and they think it's this guide. Mm-hmm. First of all, they have to find out what this is because they've at least made the connection, even if it was a mythological one, they've made this connection. So that drives the development of the telescopes
mm-hmm.
and their scanning abilities.
Well, they've got the hot air balloon that they build.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool
right.
that they would try to send a message. I mean,
yeah.
it's naive to think
yes.
we can send a message up there,
right.
but to their minds, they were
yeah.
trying something.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like...
It's really cute.
they were really trying something.
I do think Star Trek does a little bit of a good job of showing the development of different nations. It's one of the, or different planets, and I wish they had more time in more of the series, but we talk about the Ferengi took so long to develop some of
right.
this stuff, and they actually ended up buying warp drive from someone else because they were interested in commerce, not science. So
they were busy selling whips.
All the whips and the ball gags, and they could sell them to each other. And then, you know, maybe they were, I'm theorizing, maybe there are other planets in their system that had people on them as well. So they could just hop between the planets. they didn't have a reason to develop warp drive before they could just afford it. So that's how they do. Whereas, you know, humans sort of got mired in war and then finally developed warp drive when you know, there was just one man's vision. And then the Vulcans helped out. You know, these people didn't have Vulcans, but they had the drive of Voyager. There was a really interesting Titan novel, actually, in which there is a culture that has developed warp drive technology, but they don't use it for traveling between stars. They never even thought of using it that way. They just use it to power their cities. They don't even think about leaving their planet. They were just thinking, well, how can we create electricity better? So they combine matter and antimatter with their lithium crystals. But so it creates an interesting prime directive situation, because these people, I think we can contact them because they have warp drive, but they're not interested in contacting other people, so maybe we shouldn't. But it's just interesting to think about the ways that different cultures develop.
Well, Riker would just send down an away team to scout out if the women were attractive or not, and then,
exactly.
You know, because right. When you can't decide,
that's all he cares
for sure.
About.
Yes. But no, that's a really good point. I mean, that's a great example, because it's what we see in this episode too, is that towards the end, they start developing antimatter torpedoes.
Yep.
Which they're not thinking at this point about traveling to the stars. They're not thinking about using antimatter for propulsion. They're trying to figure out what is the most powerful thing that we can build to get rid of whatever this ship is in orbit of our planet that's causing these earthquakes.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting parallel for me. If you go back to World War II, when we developed the atomic bomb to end the war, that the atomic bomb that was used in World War II is not very powerful compared to the weapons that the Soviet Union and the United States developed later on. It's a very small yield weapon. But after it was used, then there's this drive again. It's like, okay, well, this side has this weapon, this side has this weapon. We have to. And that pushed us forward to keep developing these weapons that were more and more and more powerful, even though we didn't need them, of course, and we should not have developed them. But that pushed us forward to keep making them more and more and more powerful very, very quickly. And we very rapidly advanced that technology in a way that, say, some other civilization that didn't have that face-off going on, they may not have, they may have built the first one and just stuck with that technology moving forward. And then here, that's why you see this unusually fast development of the civilization, because they had to figure out how to make these things more powerful.
Yeah,
good point.
So these are the things, anyway, that I get out of the episode, even though it does jump from vignette to vignette.
Sure. I guess the main thing I would like to see was more time spent on the planet. Let's see more levels. Let's see more details about how they're changing it. Be a little more blatant with what you're saying with the episode. I feel like it kind of just ends and they never made a forceful statement. It's there if you're looking for it, but they spend a lot of time on other stuff going on, which I'd love to talk about what's going on the ship. It's not all bad, but I feel like a little bit of it is a waste of time when there's really cool stuff happening there on the planet.
This is a story that would work really well as a novel, where you had 500 pages to really, really delve into what was going on.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Definitely.
And I do agree that the resolution was a little skimpy.
Right.
It could have had a little more to it, and yet I did appreciate it for what it was. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. I mean, I enjoyed what they gave us, and yet it did seem incomplete.
Yeah.
It is one of those, again, I often feel like this, where they get to the end, and they're like, we got to wrap this up, so here's your ending.
Yeah, how do we do it?
Yeah, kind of thing. What do you guys think? I'm going to jump a little bit ahead here, because I want to talk, well, Greg, you want to talk about what was going on the ship, also on the planet, and I want to ask you guys what you think about the doctor, because I like the idea of sending the doctor down to the planet, but later on, when Jen, I don't know his name in the episode. I call him Jim. He speaks great English.
The astronaut.
Here too. Yes.
He speaks awful Korean on Lost. That's the thing.
But when he is walking down the corridor with the doctor and they're talking about the sports league, and the doctor's like, I saw the original when they faced off. I thought the doctor's exuberance about sport, I mean, I'm a college football fan. I am a diehard college football fan. I mean, if you guys think I like Star Trek, wait till college football season starts. Anyone who knows me knows that I live and die by college football. And the kind of passion that I have for college football is how the doctor was talking about the sports down the planet. But the doctor was only on the planet for 3 years.
Yeah.
Now, I thought it was an enormous mistake by the writers to send him to the planet for 3 years. He should have been on the planet for 30 years or 40 years for his whole story to work for me.
Oh, and wouldn't that have been interesting?
What do you guys feel about both the idea, sending him there in the first place, how long he was there, what he did there, how it works within the story?
All right, well, sending him down was definitely a good idea because he's not going to age. He's going to gather all this information, put it right into memory, no problem. And so he was definitely the right choice. Now, 3 years, yeah, it seemed a little sparse, and yet I kind of see why they did that for safety's sake. I mean, you don't want the guy kind of getting into any major prominent roles on that planet, because when he's gone, then boom, okay, that could create a major catastrophe. So I'm sure he was instructed to lay low a little bit and do what he was doing.
Well, he was only supposed to go for 2 days originally, and then there was the malfunction.
Right.
Then he was there for 3 years.
And then the transporter malfunction.
So why couldn't the malfunction have stranded him for 30 years?
Right.
Because it's still not very much time in script time.
No, but he would have had almost, I mean, certainly, okay, half a lifetime of experience as opposed to 3 years. Although it sounds like he did quite a bit down there.
Well, he did. I mean, as you know, three years is a long time, and people have needs.
Apparently, to not have companionship, because he definitely made that a priority while he was there.
Yeah, people have needs, and you know.
Well, and Janeway seemed to understand this a little bit.
She did.
I was looking at the episode order. Fairhaven aired right before
this one.
Oh,
did it really?
So apparently, yeah, she, for 6 years, up until that point, I mean, she'd practically been starved of companionship till she finally got her holographic boyfriend. So she's empathizing way too well with this problem. She's like, oh, yeah, I know. 6 years.
I really get it.
Yeah, unfortunately,
can we go
she
back to
got,
Ireland?
You know, her, oh, man, I don't want to, I don't want you to have to censor me.
There was, I was watching Kira and Jadzia in the Holo Suites in that, speaking of massage parlors.
Craig, I told you, your dreams are for iMessage.
This
on
was
the
an
show
episode.
We talk about canon Star Trek.
I'm pretty sure this
hey,
was an
what?
Episode
sometimes,
of the show.
Sometimes
you're pretty
it's
sure.
A little difference, Chris.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. With all the talking we do, you know, between the show, between the iMessages, between the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
You know, we kind of blur the lines of canon on here.
We do.
We're really not sure what actually happens sometimes.
But I'm pretty sure this was an actual episode where Jadzia is trying to convince Kira that, you know, this is how you cure the whole companionship issue. I worry about these Starfleet officers sometimes and how much time they really do spend on the holodeck.
And what for?
Yes, exactly.
I don't think it's entirely healthy.
No, it's really not. I mean, I guess...
I personally would draw the line at fake boyfriends.
Yes.
I'm glad Janeway gave that up because that just...
Now, I guess
that doesn't
we
work
can't all go the Riker route where he just sleeps with every single woman. You know, not all of us have that pure sexual appeal. But the fact that we have to spend so much time in the holodeck just to... Anyway, was that part of the TNG Bible, you know, that they have the holodeck just because of the companionship issue, as we should call it? Because
Riker's hogging all the chips, is that it?
Oh,
maybe so. And, I mean, yeah, they did address this. I mean, Reg Barkley mm-hmm. certainly had his little addiction yes. with several women.
I did. I did like the theory from Dork Trek over the past couple of weeks that Geordi goes home every night to holodeck Leah Brahms, who he's married to, and Barkley is their yes. butler, and it's actually Barkley.
Oh my!
Because he does love spending time on the holodeck. He just hangs out with him.
Oh my gosh! You know, I think that was real.
I think
happened.
There's a non-canon novel about that, actually.
Yeah.
I am sure.
Oh, dear. See, this is what anyway, I mean. You got to draw a line.
I'm going to get us back on track. Let me get us back on track, because I was going to
cast my line. I'm going to reel you guys back in now to the doctor.
I was going to say about the doctor.
On the planet.
Because you were saying he should have spent 30 years there. And I was going to complain, like, well, you can't give the doctor, you know, 30 extra years of memories. Like, that's going to be really weird. But that's a thing they do on Star Trek all the time. I mean, Picard, how long was Picard theoretically on the planet in the inner life? Like, he's got to deal with that. Miles, right. I just was talking about Hard Time. Miles never lost those memories of being in the prison cell for 20 years. As much as he lost the hallucination, but he still had those memories. So the doctor easily could have kept his memories of 30 years on the planet, and it would have fit in with how Star Trek goes. Yeah, that would have been a lot more interesting if they'd gone that direction.
I just think it would have worked better because I completely did not buy
yeah.
his knowledge of the planet towards the end of the episode, because it's 3 years. I mean, I can speak from experience living in another culture. 3 years is not long enough for you to assimilate into a culture the way that the doctor was playing it.
Yeah.
At
yeah.
the end. So it just mm. didn't quite work for me. Now, the bit about his medical knowledge, sure.
Right.
First of all, he's a doctor and he is a computer program.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 3 years. I think he could know absolutely every tiny detail of the physiology of these people. I have no problem with that. But the cultural bits for me, yeah. it just yeah. felt like, well, maybe the writers didn't quite yeah. have the experience.
Well,
the real life experience to
yeah,
play.
Yeah, I hadn't thought so. About well, that. I've not lived in another culture.
Yeah, I guess we know that the doctor's a joiner. He's not a wallflower. He just throws himself into it. He doesn't spend all of his time in the gaijin bars and watching Netflix at home.
Who are we talking about, Greg?
Yeah.
That was an awfully specific reference there.
Oh, goodness. No, I mean, I spent 3 years in Japan, and I couldn't tell you anything about the Japanese sports ball. It really just flew entirely past me. So I absolutely see what you're saying, Chris.
But, okay, so that's the doctor. We talked about the doctor. Is there anything else about the doctor's story that you wanted to see that wasn't there? Or how would you have played it, Greg, if we did your story that you suggested at the beginning, but we really got to see him be there for, say, 30 years.
Well, I'm not to harp on this too much, but at the same time we're seeing the culture develop, it could be this whole interesting story about the doctor trying to survive day to day in this culture that's he keeps getting pulled of and then thrown back into it at a later date. Because apparently he is the sort of guy who wants to have a family and make it happen. We see him, you know, with his family, and then he gets pulled out, and suddenly it's 200 years later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can see him. He goes and visits the observatory, and he has a conversation with those guys about the skyship and trying to send messages to it. Obviously, he's trying to stay. So we have this thing where he's trying to stay out of it, but also, you know, the little bits of influence. I just think the doctor could have had an interesting role. The fact that we never see him on the surface of the planet really galls me. The time we spend with Chakotay being excited about anthropology and Naomi Wildman's book report, not to keep harping on that, but we don't see him on the planet at all. And it frustrates me.
Yeah, you know what? That is a really good point. It would have been awesome to have seen even just a little glimpse of what he was going through there. He could have been incorporated into one of those little time period scenes mm-hmm,
sure.
that we saw. And we could have seen his little adventure. We could have seen his 3 years. And then, I don't know, would 3 years have been enough in that kind of a context?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just feel like they were a little bit hamstrung by budget. They sort of, they had the
cliff
set, with the blue screen and the really horrible blue screen shots. And they had like the one observatory set, and they had the ship capsule, the spaceship. And that's really all they had. They couldn't really do the whole thing as it really should have been done. Like, we couldn't build a home for the Doctor and show his family and show his workplace. Like, they just didn't have the money for it.
That's what I was thinking right now when you were talking about it. I have to tell you, really, I wish someone, if you're listening to the show, Judith and Garfield Reeve Stevens, the authors, great Star Trek authors, if they would like take this story and do a novel, this could make one of the great Star Trek novels, I think.
Oh, it really could.
Absolutely. I would love to see that. I think it would be a beautiful novelization. Absolutely. It would,
Spend more time with the Doctor down on the planet.
Yeah.
Spend more time with the scientists on the planet and see their development. Spend more time with Naomi as she's researching on the holodeck for her book report and finding some primary sources to quote from.
You could get her doing the research. The proofreading session would be great when she goes down, and when Seven sits down with her in the mess hall with the red pen, they mark up the paper, would be riveting.
Yes. So,
gripping.
Please, let's get on that.
They could share some hot cocoa together. It would be touching.
Oh, man.
Play some Caddis Cod afterward. Yeah.
So, the next thing I want to talk about, I love, Char, as you were live tweeting your viewing of this, and you got to the staff meeting moment.
Staff meeting!
And then Greg sent me later, as he was watching this, an iMessage that it was so hilarious to him that they were all trying to find a loophole in the Prime Directive.
Yeah. So Janeway sort of sits back. She's like, well, wait.
Yes.
We've got the Prime Directive, and there's nothing we can do. And then, I don't remember who was doing what, but everyone
was
looking
for... Is that your Kate Mulgrew voice?
Let's not sit on that too long.
I thought it was kind of a little cross between Janeway trying to do not Patrick Stewart. Right.
Janeway tried to do...
We have the Prime Directive, buddy.
It's not Kate Mulgrew is what I was doing. But no, they're all looking for excuses. One of them was like, well, we're already influenced their culture by, these earthquakes. That's got to be enough, right?
And then Paris is like, screw the Prime Directive. This dude deserves an answer.
Yeah, I love that.
Right. Like,
that's Paris for you
He practically does say dude,
he practically does.
I think he does.
He's so freaking laid back. He's just,
My canon, he says dude there.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's adopted into my canon as well, because he's so laid back, leaning in that chair. He's so aloof. I mean, he might as well. And, the thing is, it just depends on which Janeway shows up for the episode, whether or not she's going to adhere to the Prime Directive or just totally throw it out the window and stamp on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found it kind of hilarious, actually, that she brought up the Prime Directive.
That's true.
Because normally it's somebody else. Well, it's usually Chakotay or somebody else.
She only brought it up because she was waiting for them to give her an excuse. Like, that was the whole point of the scene.
Right.
Like, guys, you got to give me an excuse to break the Prime Directive. I can't just do it because I feel like it. At least not this episode.
Not today.
Right.
Buddy.
Buddy. What does she say? What does she say instead of buddy, Charlene? You're the Voyager expert.
Oh, let me think about this. I don't like being on the spot.
All right, we'll have to talk about that next time. What exactly goes into the not Kate Mulgrew?
Give me some time to think about this. Yeah, please.
Yes, okay. Yeah, we'll work on that for next time. And for now,
maybe it's dude.
It could be.
I don't know. Does she seem like...
Listen, dude.
Does she seem like a dude?
We got to talk about the Prime Directive, dude. Now I am Janeway trying to be not Patrick Stewart. I'm very confused now.
As am I.
Sorry. Well,
what did you guys think about it, though? I mean, for me, I felt like it was inadvertent, of course, but the Prime Directive had already been violated when they got caught in orbit of the planet and they started influencing the development of the culture.
Right.
I agree with that. That's when they did break the Prime Directive in my mind.
Like, they never really should have gone to this planet in the first place. I was missing the scene where someone yells at Janeway. Like, seriously, what is wrong? There was no reason to look at this planet. We got stuck. It's your fault. Seriously.
Well, they cut that scene out. That's back in the mess hall where, all the lower deck ensigns are sitting around eating. Right. And one of them walks in, a Maquis guy walks in and like, well, that dumbass captain, she's done it again, you know?
Right.
Right. That's... Well, okay, think about this, guys. We're 6 years in. Chakotay has obviously lost his fire when it comes to making Janeway question right. her yeah. decisions. Because he, like at the very beginning of the episode, he's like right by her and she says, think we need a closer look, right? You know what I love about that scene is when she leans in for closer look, she's practically like on yeah, him.
I know.
Closer
well,
look.
That's
in my ready room.
That's right.
Something. I mean, geez, get off of him, Janeway. What are you getting at, babe?
That's companionship.
That's where we...
She, yeah. After she dumped the holographic right. boyfriend, she returned to Chaki.
That's where we don't hear it on camera, but if you look in her eyes, she says Coco.
Meet me in the ready room, Coco.
Maybe she's cuckoo for Coco.
Oh man.
Yes, but I don't. It's like he doesn't put up a fight at all. There's no, like,
no.
Don't you remember what happened last time? And he's like, yeah, sounds like a great idea. Let's do it.
Right. I mean, that's what the
whatever you say, Catherine. I love you so much. It's a great idea. We need to do that. Yes. Right. Yes. Like, yes. Yes. Let's do that.
Isn't the first officer supposed to be there simply to be the voice of reason? I mean, if nothing yes. else, he's the one guy who can tell the captain that's the stupidest idea I've heard of. Yeah.
Yes, but he is so tired of being torn down. He has just given up on life.
Because
he is her slave.
She doesn't listen to him.
Right.
Riker.
Right.
Riker is a great first officer.
Yeah.
Riker will stand up to Picard. He respects Picard. If Picard makes a final decision, he will do it. But he will voice his opinion to Picard, and more importantly, Picard will listen to Riker.
Right.
They have yeah. a relationship there.
Right.
Janeway and Chakotay, they don't have...
They don't have that
They have a relationship, but they don't have that
no.
kind of relationship.
They have a whole other relationship.
They've got...
that we're...
Yeah, and the other side of the ready
yes.
room.
Yes.
When it comes to decisions, it's practically a one-way yeah. thing. Janeway yeah. goes into the ready room, already decided what she wants yep. to do. She takes the input from her crew, and it either affirms her decision yeah. or affirms it even more, right. despite what they say,
right.
depending.
And
that's that.
Yeah.
It's very different from Picard in that sense.
Now, I do think Tuvok has like a once-per-season trump card that he can lay down.
Yes, he does.
He doesn't play it too often.
Yes, he does get a pass.
And I think that was Chakotay's fault. Chakotay fought back too much. Tuvok knows the long game, that he needs to wait till it's really, really important. Then he can take Janeway aside and be like, look, Captain, seriously.
You are absolutely right. I like that. Once a season,
yeah,
he plays that card.
All...
When he absolutely has right. to, when he knows no one else is going to get through to her thick little head.
All of this Janeway hate for the Janeway editor,
but I love
and host
her.
Of Delta Quadrant.
No, Char loves Janeway,
yes,
actually.
But,
I know.
Yes, I do love her dearly. But you know what? No being is perfect, and I see her for what she really
well, look,
is. She is imperfect.
We're always...
She is inconsistently written.
Yeah. We're the hardest on the ones we love, right? That's because we care about them.
Right.
That's...
And, well, yeah, exactly. And I care about Janeway, and I... absolutely hate it when the writers muck her up.
And that's...
That said, she's still beautiful and I love
right.
her.
Is that why Brian rags on Enterprise so much? Just because he loves
right.
the show so much?
Because he loves
inside.
It so much. He does.
He really loves Brian. All of those cardboard characters that he just has to rag on. Anyway.
We are on to you, Brian. We know your game. You know, plus Tuvok, I mean, you know, he goes in and when he brings that pack of coffee with him too. That's his.
Yes.
His trump card.
Oh, this is
yeah.
true. Along with the card he redeems,
yes.
he also brings a pound of ground coffee.
Right.
A pound of ground.
That's ready to go.
That's
the
right.
finest blend. Whatever Janeway's favorite is. You know what? We never did learn what her favorite blend of coffee was. So she's either really indiscriminate and doesn't care what it is. I mean, it could be dirt water for all she cares, as long as it's got caffeine in it. Or if she's like a major connoisseur. Like, O'Brien really dug the Jamaican blend, double strong, double sweet. And if that Janeway has a preference like that, then we don't know what it is. And I'd like to know that, just for the record.
I'm thinking it's like a caramel
okay.
macchiato. You know, you've got the Starbucks there and the replicator.
No, with,
I don't think so.
No, with Coffee Black. Yeah, Janeway, no, she wants.
That's probably
she's
true.
Into the strong stuff.
She just needs the caffeine hypo spray just inserted into her neck at all times.
There you go.
I'm not sure why that she didn't have that implanted.
Maybe she,
with the amount that
maybe
she
gets a coffee with like some Red Bull dumped in it and a couple extra shots.
That's what she did during the year of hell, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's how she kept
Indeed.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the only way she could, yes.
All right. I don't, what were we talking about? We're talking about the Prime Directive.
We
were talking about the Prime Directive.
Prime Directive. So,
I think we hit that pretty solidly. Janeway knew what she wanted to do when she walked into that room. She.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was a really big conundrum for them, though, because they inadvertently became part of this planet's culture. Because of the differential in the rate of time and the fact that although for our crew, they were there for only for... Did they ever really say how long they were there? It was a few hours, right? Were they even there for days?
I assumed a few days.
Yeah, they were there for several days at least.
Yeah, she said we just arrived. You know, they were there for... It's a very short time.
Yeah.
And but for the people on the planet, it's like the entire course of their civilization. And I felt like... For Janeway, she had a duty to somehow... They were going to destroy the planet. So, but it's a conundrum because no matter what she did, they've already influenced the culture. And she had a really good point when she said that if we rip this all away, we may do irreparable damage to this culture as well. Because
right.
suddenly it's been gone. But I think at the end, when it became clear that these people wanted them gone... somehow, and they were going to destroy the ship to get rid of it,
yeah.
then it made it easier for her. Then she no longer had to worry about, well, if we rip this all away, then it was a matter of like, we've really got to get out of here somehow.
We've messed everything up so much
right.
that we might as well just mess things up a little bit more so we can get out of it.
Well, then here's the thing, though. Their culture had come to enough of an understanding to know what Voyager
right.
really was.
Yes. Right.
Had they left back in the whole medieval days... Yeah. I do think that that culture would have had some sort of really horrible damage done upon to it and would have developed very differently.
Hmm.
But these people at that point understood what was really going
right,
on.
Right.
So once Voyager was gone, I'm sure they were somewhat okay with it. And then they could go on in peace without their civilization being destroyed by earthquakes.
Right.
And in a way, I think in the end, the resolution, it turned out in the best possible way. Really, because in the end, these people learned that there are other people in the universe. They learned mm-hmm. that there's life on other planets. They learned that there is a time differential between their planet and the rest of space. They and it drove forward their curiosity and their will to advance their technology and advance their scientific knowledge. And eventually,
right.
and as quick as the ending was, and when he says that it will be some time before my people join the rest of the galaxy, but it showed that that's something they're going to work on, and eventually
yeah.
they're going to go
yeah.
out and explore. So really, if you think about the fact that this civilization just developed antimatter weapons, I mean,
yeah.
they could start fighting amongst themselves. They could destroy themselves. But I think in the end, what they got from their encounter with Voyager was a drive to move their civilization forward and not to get mired down in fighting on their own world, but to go out and explore. So as
right.
silly as it sounds and
yeah.
as righteous as maybe it sounds from us now, maybe it all was a good thing and that Janeway and the crew did something good for this planet that they... showed them a path forward that they can avoid some
no,
of the fighting
I
that,
think you're
that
right.
we have been in.
Yeah, because with its presence, it influenced it. But then, yeah, you leave it on a note where it wasn't going to be that Voyager was going to leave and then suddenly they lost that drive. You know how we were talking how the culture advanced so quickly.
She wasn't.
Well, they still have that drive to keep going.
Right.
Despite Voyager not being there anymore.
She wasn't Kirk. She didn't fly in, destroy everything, and go, well, you're on your own now. I hope you're up to it.
Right.
I'll see you someday. Not.
Yeah.
I really think you guys are in some sort of reality distortion field from watching Voyager. because you're rationalizing the hell out of this. I mean, this culture could have gone in a completely different direction. Maybe they would have been the most advanced society of all time, and now all they've done is gone to go with this one skyship. I mean, think of all of the art that was never created because they were all focused on the skyship and making skyship action figures and Saturday morning cartoons. This is not a culture that was able to progress normally. It was all focused on Voyager. This is the most unhealthy culture we've seen since what was the episode of TOS that where with the gangster planet?
A piece of the action.
This is piece of the action bad on the part of Voyager.
How do you not know the name of that episode? You just watched it last week.
I know
week.
I did. I'm really bad at episode titles. I'm sorry. I know the episodes much better than I know the titles.
All right. Well,
but I mean I appreciate your rationalization and I see where you're coming from, but it really would be better if Voyager had never shown up. And this is why the Prime Directive exists in the first place, because who knows what this culture would have done without Voyager there. I don't think it's going to be a good idea for all ships to just, let's just meddle a little bit and see if we can get them to advance a little faster.
Sort of
poke at them. Just see what we can do to maybe get space travel a little bit faster. No. This is what they're trying to avoid.
Sure, absolutely. No, I do agree with that. Ideally, Voyager would have never influenced the planet. I'm simply saying that because they did, then things had to turn out some way. And so I guess it turned out
all right
in a good way in the end.
Janeway remembered for a little moment, oh, we're explorers. Let's go check it out. And yeah, this is what happens. And no, it really, really shouldn't have been there, but too late. So all in all, I think things ended up as good as they possibly could have.
Well, stay tuned for the Voyager Season 8 follow-up to this episode in which Naomi Wildman recites her book report while Chakotay does a presentation on his anthropological findings.
It's very excited.
Yay. Yes. Meanwhile, Janeway looks for another civilization to
read. Right. Do you think she does this every time? She just walks in the staff meeting. Okay, guys, can you think of a way we can go down there to this planet, please? I know Prime Directive and all that, but can you guys think of any excuse, please?
Yeah, there's got to be something out there we can corrupt. Right. There's got to be something that we can shoot things at or explore or ruin and change irrecoverably.
Right. What they really do is they all go into stellar cartography, and she says, Seven, can you pull up a map of, say, the everything within 20 light years of here? And it all pops up on the screen.
I want that one.
And Seven says, I detect 5 M-class planets within range, Captain. And Janeway says, okay, tell me about each one. Which one could delay us the most on our journey back home?
Yes.
And when they figure it out, she calls up and she says, Mr. Paris, could you set a course?
Yes.
And Tom's like, but that's not a direction that home is whatsoever. Shut up. Tom.
And Chakotay. just do it. Punch it in there. Go.
Are you a Starfleet officer or aren't you? The captain gave you a direct order. But I just want to go home.
Shut up.
Oh my gosh.
You don't want her breaking out the compression phaser rifles on you. I promise you that.
We haven't started airlocking people on this show, but we can start.
So say we all.
Yeah, don't make her do it.
All right. Well, I guess we've been through pretty much the whole episode.
What are we doing
here
with Janeway today?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, gosh, we're really on Janeway today, aren't we?
We really are.
Medieval Janeway is coming out. She wants to whoop some ass.
Oh, all right. Well, we've made it to the...
I'm telling you, it's all because of that stupid holographic boyfriend she had in Fairhaven. Ruined her life.
Have to go back and watch Fairhaven.
Oh, don't. Sorry, I really do not like that episode. The whole thing... Okay, I know we're not talking about this episode. Cut it out if you want, Chris. But the whole thing of having a holographic boyfriend, for one thing, is just a really complex vibrator. Two, she later alters him.
Oh my god.
She alters him to make him taller.
Yes, she does.
And then deletes the white.
Yes.
You don't do that in real life, Janeway. You know this is wrong.
Oh god.
For fuck's sake.
You know, there have been a few times I've wanted to delete the boyfriend, but at least I realized it's not possible.
Exactly. No, she actually goes and does this because she can. No, sweetheart. That's not how it happens. Shame on you. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I need a drink.
I think we all do.
Okay.
Especially Chris.
Sorry, Chris
doesn't know what he's going to do next.
He's bewildered now. Are you okay there?
This is the thing. You know, right. I have to record in the morning. I can't drink during the show.
Right.
Here's the thing, guys, is I'm not drinking during the show. Should I?
I don't know. I think if the two of us started drinking during the show, who knows?
Oh, that could be fun.
After this, I just need to go back to the bridge and get a bottle of rum, and that's what I need. You know the best part about this, you guys? We are at the exact same time marker where the gag balls came out in the last Outpost Ready Room.
We know Char's limit, I suppose.
You
my threshold, yes, if you will, we is know about Char's 58 limit. Minutes.
You know, it's like when you're,
and here it was going so well.
You know, it's like when you're teaching, or you're in a meeting, and you know that there's just that point where the ADD kicks in,
yeah,
and like nothing, yes, productive is going to happen from here on out. We've hit that point.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, I just started teaching this week. I know all about this.
There you go.
I know at what point my students start to waver off if I don't break up the lecture.
Exactly.
And if I don't break up the lecture, what do I need to do to make them stay alert?
This is what I'm saying. You're just keeping the listeners alert, right, Char? That's what you're doing, basically.
There you go.
Exactly. I know this point. I mean, I'm a teacher. I'm an expert at this. And so once the ADD kicks in, I got to do something to keep you guys from falling asleep at your desks. That's all. I'm just doing my job. How many times do I have to say this? Just doing my job.
Goodness. I'm going to print it on a t-shirt.
Just trying to do it well.
All right. Well, I usually ask for final thoughts. I think we've pretty much gone over everything. Do you have any final thoughts?
I'm good. I've said my piece about what I wanted the show to be instead of this. I do like the episode. I think it's a really good episode of Voyager. You want to say it's a top 10 Voyager episode? Sure, go right ahead. It's a warp 10. It's Voyager. I'll say it's a warp factor.
You're giving
10.
It a warp 10. Wow. All right.
Wow.
How about you, Char?
I don't know if I'd go warp 10, because that's pretty dangerous.
It's like, whose line is it anyway? The warp scores mean nothing.
Char, actually, I think this is Greg saying that he wants to have salamander babies.
I'm married.
That's the only thing.
I have to say about that.
Me too, and I'm also the wrong gender, so I think I'm safe.
Right, so
find
Greg,
someone else to have my salamander
kidnap
babies
Kidnap somebody
with.
Else, sweetheart.
Right.
I love you, Greg Unit, but I don't want to have salamander babies with you.
I'm crushed.
I'm so sorry.
All right. Well, what are you giving this episode? Not that we actually rate episodes on this show, but for some reason
sure.
We occasionally do. So
wait, what are we talking about again, Chris?
Char's rating is, this is no fair haven.
That's for darn sure. It's a hell of a lot better than
that.
Okay,
that's good.
No, I really do enjoy watching this episode. I do like its bigger picture elements of watching a civilization develop and what kind of things this episode is implying by showing that, and how one little thing impacts a whole society, blah, blah, blah. We could get real deep, but let's not.
Stop looking at me like that, Char.
It's a little late for that, so I'm not going to do that. But I probably, I'm going to not go the Dork Trek route. It's not a 5.5 or a 6. I'd give it probably an 8. It's pretty solid.
I'm sorry. We don't actually do warp scores, and I'm sorry for leading us down this hole. Please, no one take our warp scores seriously.
No.
Yeah, okay,
but
whatever.
I'd say, no, I agree with you. It's an 8 if I am going to rate it. It is a good episode.
Okay, and Warp 8 is a safe speed at which to travel, so you are good there. I'm going to give it 8 Leola roots. I always rate Voyager episodes in Leola roots.
Yeah.
And
oh, you know what? For this episode, I'll give it 8 Naomi Book Reports.
Oh, wow.
There we go. And I'll give it 8 Chakotay Anthropology Reports.
Sweet. There we go.
Oh. And Janeway gives it 10 Cocos.
Oh, man.
And Greg just suggested a title for me, so.
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it's a good title. I think that'll really help our SEO.
I think it will draw in some traffic. You could say that.
Maybe not the kind of traffic you want, Chris, but traffic nonetheless.
Oh, are we...
I am holding my iPhone up to the camera.
Yay!
For sure.
Oh,
I love you guys so much.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, I think we have covered everything that we can cover in this episode. So, Char, as always, thanks for being on with us.
Thank you, Char.
Thank you for having me. I don't know why you keep having me back, but it's a lot of fun, guys.
Oh, Chris, I think I finally recovered. We had a little bit of time. I sipped some of my tea, Earl Grey hot. I thought about other things, and I think I'm back to being serious, talking about Star Trek once again.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder what I was thinking when I brought Char on as the Voyager editor. But
yeah, I know.
No, I'm glad I did. She makes Voyager a lot of fun.
Yes.
But anyway, we got to talk about what is... You mentioned a top 10 Voyager episode. I don't know if it's in my top 10 Voyager episodes, but it's definitely up there as, you know, one of my favorites. It's one of the creative concepts that the show did, so I'm glad we got to talk about it.
You're absolutely right that it does need to become a novel, because as good as an episode it is, it would be even better as a novel where they really got to flesh out a lot of the stuff that they were only able to touch on just because of the limits of TV and the TV time constraints.
Yeah, time and budget. So... let's get to work on that. I just have one rule.
Yeah.
Okay. As the potential publisher, I have one rule.
Right.
You are not allowed to co-author this novel with Charlene.
We're just going to have a whole B story about Janeway and Coco.
And then for some weird reason, Rain Robinson shows up on the ship.
I'm talking seriously about Star Trek.
She has
now,
on so Libby's eyebrows.
I'm only... goodness, you're not helping, Chris. You're not helping at all.
All right. The problem is you haven't been wearing your Sirius hat lately.
I know. I'm wearing my science uniform, and I'm not sure if this... I think the Sirius hat would clash a little bit with the teal. God, I hate this teal. I really cannot believe I've been wearing a teal uniform for 3 hours. Our Laura listeners will know how much I really despise this uniform. I'm starting to wish I'd borrowed the O'Brien instead.
Well, the things you do for the show, Greg. That's what people know, how much you love this show.
Yes,
all right.
Exactly.
Well, let's tell people where they can contact us if they would like to share their thoughts on Blink of an Eye, on any of the things we talked about in news. Let us know which sitcom you want Greg to pitch first. You can go to trek.fm/contact, and there's a form there where you can send us a message. We love getting messages that way because you have plenty of room to write. And if you send us a message that way, we will read it on the show as part of the mailbag. It's kind of hard for us to gather all the different comments that we get from Twitter, from Facebook and places. We try, but it's kind of hard. Those from the contact form come directly to my inbox, and so it's easy for us to do a mailbag segment. And if you want to record, like Char did a while back, an audio message for us, you can send us one that way as well. You can go to Facebook and find us at facebook.com/trekfm. Google Plus is hyperchannel/trekfmg+. And of course, on Twitter, you'll find us under username trekfm. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. I am there at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN. And yeah, I mean, follow me, have some conversations with me. I actually went on a spurt this week where I followed a few of our of our Trek friends that I haven't been seeing, you know, their whole posts before. If you are following me and talk Trek with me, please at reply me so that I remember that you exist. Some people I don't see, and then I don't see a whole conversation because I happen to not be following one person that happens to be the at reply in, you know, one of those Twitter snowballs that erupt.
Yeah, definitely. If you follow us on Twitter, please say hello, please at reply. I think Greg and I are the same, that we both use Twitter largely as a texting device too. So we tweet a lot, but a lot of them are at replies, and therefore our at reply stream goes by very quickly. And sometimes it's easy to miss things as well. So, you know, at reply us and say hello, and so we can follow you back and we can talk about Trek with you on there. You can follow me if you want. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I am happy to say that as my schedule has relaxed a little bit, I am back to full-fledged tweeting as I used to be. I'm tweeting all the time about all kind of random things. Of course, a lot of Star Trek. When I tweet about my daily life to prevent it from just being really boring and mundane, I do try to put a Star Trek twist on it. So follow me and see how well I'm doing with that. Of course, football season's about to start, so you'll get some of that. And you'll get my random song lyrics. Sorry. They're there.
The song lyrics have been killing me, Chris. Like, what are you listening to, really? And why?
A lot of them out of context. That's why I tweet them out of context of the song. It's like a puzzle. You have to figure them out.
Right.
All right. But that's where you can find us. Go by Trek FM. Go by the site, trek.fm. We've got all of our shows there. Of course, this. We have Matter Stream, Trek News and Views with Colin. We've got Decade for USTO players with Colin and Tom. We've got Hyper Channel with Tristan. We've got tons of stuff going on the site all the time. Articles, games, and the polls, which apparently on the first page of Google right now, if you Google Star Trek Las Vegas 2013, you will be sent to the poll, what should Greg wear to the convention? So we've got a good jump on that. Anyway, everyone for listening to another long show. And Greg, I'm going to wander off and go take a look at the Hitachi catalog.
All right, Chris, I think it's time to stick Naomi's book report in it, because the Ready Room is done. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Meanwhile, Greg removes a pillow from his butt.
I know. I'm done with that pillow. Oh, goodness. I am wearing pants. You can see I'm wearing pants right now.
It's a good thing.
I have some serious editing to do here at the end of the show.
You do. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry, Chris.
Very sorry.
You got your work cut out for you this week. I'm so sorry.